You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Back and better than ever. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. And you know something? I love it when that happens. When you spend all day hyping something, promoting something, and hoping it lives up to some semblance of the hype. And then, improbably, it exceeds it. What a night. Let's go.
Here we go!
Only one place to start.
The Hawks will rock and roll to Cleveland, Ohio, and the Final Four.
An extraordinary game by the GOAT.
It's amazing to be back in the Final Four.
So I tell you, I've been at this place a long time. I'm at ESPN this summer. It'll be 28 years. And so good things happening here still matter to me. Someday I'm going to die, and the first four letters of my obituary are going to be ESPN. And so I will admit, going into last night's game, I was a little nervous. Could it possibly live up to all of the hype and all of the attention and all of the hopes that people had for it? Because it was a night that had the perfect recipe. It had everything you could possibly want in a sporting event. It had extraordinarily well-known stars going head-to-head against each other with the stakes through the roof and at least a little bit of healthy dislike between the two, regardless of what they say. Clearly, this was a game that each of them wanted, and by each of them, I mean Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, wanted more than they would want just any other ordinary game. And somehow, it lived up to it. The first half was as compelling a half of basketball as I've watched all year, regardless of the level, regardless of who was playing and why they were playing and what they were playing for. And then the second half, Caitlin Clark solidifying herself as the best women's college basketball player that I've ever watched, took a game over in a way that was breathtaking in its sensationalness, and Iowa goes on to the Final Four. And so Tim Legler is here along with the members of the hashtag crew. And Tim, I know you have been locked in on this. What do you say about that performance in that game last night?
We keep talking about living up to it and all of those things, and obviously it did that. I think the most fascinating component of this for me was to watch a player like Caitlin Clark be this much under the microscope, have this much pressure on her, have a game plan specifically designed to try to contain her, to have her operate in this level of comfort zone. Was just amazing for me to watch, because normally players will speed it up, or maybe they don't play, the cleanest game, but they try to will their way to win. She was almost perfect technically from a skill standpoint. And that was what was so amazing to me, with the amount of pressure and what she has to do to carry the weight for her entire team and facilitating the game. And then also, by the way, can you go give us, 35 to 45 somewhere in there? That's what it's going to take to win. To see her do it and look so comfortable in the moment against a team like that, that to me was what was so amazing. We always talk about the Curry comparison. I thought this game was more like a Luka Doncic type of game.
Huh.
When we've seen him at his best, remember a few years ago against the Clippers, when he basically won two games in that series by himself, what he did against the Phoenix Suns the year they went to the conference finals in a game seven, like where everything just slowed down for him specifically. LeBron, that years ago, the game six up in Boston, when everything happened so slowly for him under the most immense pressure. That's what I saw last night in Caitlin Clark, and the combination of scoring and creating as well.
Well, look, as a lifelong NBA viewer and fan, that's what I was trying to come up with. I was trying to think, as I'm watching it, who is her game like? Who is it reminiscent of? And when you see someone shooting logo threes, most people are immediately going to go to Steph Curry. But Steph, and he's an excellent passer, is not the facilitator. I mean, that isn't his role. They play much more of a motion offense and all that. It's just not what they do and not what they ask of him. She really is, and I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, this is going to be a ridiculously dated comparison, But if you're old enough to remember Tiny Archibald, like Tiny Archibald is the only player ever to lead the NBA in scoring and assists in the same season. Now, they didn't have threes then, so he wasn't shooting long distance shots like this. But the ball was in his hands on literally every play. And he either scored or passed it to the person who did on every single play. The difference was he was doing it on bad teams. She's doing it on a team that might win the championship.
That's a good comparison as well. But I want to get back to the Luka thing as well for this reason. You think about Curry, like one of the things that makes him who he is his willingness to move without the basketball and the amount of attention he creates and the amount of defensive shifts that he creates just by his presence off the ball. You think about Luka, he doesn't really do that. Like everything Luka does, he has the basketball first, and the passes he makes typically are passed expecting there to be a shot attempt at the end of it. He doesn't just give the ball up for no reason. And Caitlin Clark's kind of the same way. Like when she does something with her handle to create a passing window, that pass is going to lead to someone directly to shoot the basketball. It's just so precise and just so, you know, slim down what she does. I love the fact that her handle, you know, she has like four or five different moves that she's mastered. And every one of them is either used to create shooting space, a passing window, or a driving lane. Everything she does with her handle is used for that. Nothing is wasted. And that's what you saw on full display last night.
If you want to give the ultimate tip of the cap to the magnitude of this game, I believe Hembo stayed up to watch it. Now, Hembo is a man. Hembo is a man who once took his wife to dinner at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So
that was Valentine's Day, by the way.
Called it dinner?
Called it dinner.
That's okay.
Well, we had a full 2-hour discussion on that. Okay. But this is a man who leads an early life.
Yeah.
And I believe even Hembo stayed up to watch that show last night.
I did, and I got some numbers for you guys to be able to amplify that Luka Doncic comparison. Right now, Luka is actually on pace to break Tiny's record for most points scored and assisted on per game in an NBA season. Luka is accounting for 58 points a game this season. It's a 48-minute game, by the way, of course. So right now, Iowa is averaging 92 points a game this season. That leads the nation. It's the most by any team in the last 10 years. Of those 92 points a game, Clark is scoring or assisting on 52 of them. Again, in a 40-minute game. The comparison is apt, at least from the perspective of the numbers. And when I watch Caitlin Clark play, she controls the game the way that Luka does, the way that Jokic does, the way that very few players in the NBA do.
Yeah, and I think the best Curry comparison is, you know, the range we know. It's what I said earlier with you, Greeny. The number of shots she makes where she escapes to her left and then the defender closes on her right arm. Mm. Steph Curry also unaffected by that to an incredible degree, to where the point she's shooting the ball sometimes and she's palm on palm basically with the defender closing on that side of her body. It requires a different level of concentration to be able to do that. And that to me is the best comparison to Steph Curry. The deep shooting and then the fact that she shoots so many shots with the defender closing on her shooting hand. Very difficult thing to pull off.
Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch to Progressive could save big. Quote today at progressive.com. So we'll have much more on that as we go. I did want to talk to you about one other thing. Yesterday, quite literally as we were coming on the air to do this show, Woj tweeted the news about Joel Embiid's return. I still haven't seen if he's playing tonight. Has that come across?
It has not come across yet.
They play OKC tonight. They have 7 games remaining, inclusive of tonight. He's supposed to come back very soon, including possibly as soon as tonight. I am very intrigued by the possibilities of Embiid and the Sixers. I actually heard some people saying yesterday, this, I'm not reporting this. I just heard people speculating that perhaps he could have come back sooner than this. But they were just sort of waiting until exactly the right time, make sure he's at his absolute best, but that he has been ramping up. So if he gets 6-7 games under his belt and they go in with a sort of a fresh and healthy Joel Embiid, what do the Sixers become?
They become, I think, potentially the biggest threat to the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference. I think right now you'd have to say that's Milwaukee. We've got just a larger sample size of what that all looks like. We haven't had as much of a sample size with Joel Embiid because he's been out for a long time. And look, they did the best they could to keep their head above water. They fell from third all the way down to eighth while he was out. But I think at least staved off the possibility at one point where it looked like they might fall completely out of the play, and that's not going to be the case. Most likely they're going to be in that 7-8 game, and you're getting Joel Embiid back. Right? The most dominant offensive force in the Eastern Conference. That's what you're injecting into this. By the way, a game changer defensively as well. There's not a great matchup for him. There's not a great scheme you can devise for Joel Embiid because he dominates the mid-range area of the floor to that extent. So you're injecting this now into this race that looked like it's Boston, certainly head and shoulders above everybody else in the East. And we were just trying to figure out, well, who's the other team going to be? Who's the last one standing against the Celtics? And it looked like it for a while, hey, was it going to be the Knicks, the Cavs? Was it going to be, you know, them? You know, the Bucks finally rounded into form, and it looks like clearly a collision course Milwaukee-Boston. Well, guess what? That collision course might be interrupted by Joel Embiid coming back to the 76ers.
Like yesterday on the show when this news broke, I floated the idea that the Joel Embiid injury might wind up being a blessing in disguise for this reason. We've seen him tail off in the playoffs basically every year, especially so in the last couple. He's about 1,000 minutes right now fewer than he was entering the playoffs in each of the last 2 years. Might that lack of wear and tear wind up actually impacting him positively because he's not dealing with the regular season minutes load, and he's just dealing with the recovery from the injury. And so long as that injury recovery is right, maybe he can be the same player he was before he got hurt.
It's an enormous factor. Like you look at in recent history with guys like Steph Curry, LeBron James, who took advantage of being out with an injury mm-hmm. at a certain time of the year to be that fresh and energized when the playoffs started. And it means more to Embiid than any of those guys, because in the past, in the postseason, he's either been banged up or he looks gassed at times. That shouldn't be the case now. He's going to have enough games to get his stamina up. If assuming he plays tonight and plays these last handful of games, he'll have enough to get his stamina up to where now he should be able to play his normal minutes once you get into a potentially a seven-game series. He's going to be out there, I think, for the normal amount of time, but he's going to feel completely different. He feels right now, by the way, and Greeny, to your point, the MO now with modern NBA players is you do come back well after you actually feel like you're 100%.
Right.
Because there's fewer practice days. And that's a big part of this. You want to see live scrimmaging. The NBA doesn't do that as often in between games as they used to, so you don't have as much time to be able to see a guy go full speed against competition with guys hitting them and playing through that. That's why it takes longer for guys to come back. He's going to feel literally like he does opening night when he finally takes the court for the 76ers, and certainly by the time he would take the court in a seven-game series against somebody and he gets, you know, six, seven games to get some of the rust off.
Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
So I received an email from the people at the NBA in charge of this saying that I got my vote again this year. So when I was hosting NBA Countdown the last couple of years, I was a voter. So I voted for All-Star and all that kind of stuff. And I would really like to keep, and delightfully, they offered me to keep my vote. And of course, I gratefully kept it. And I take this very seriously. Like I turned down a Heisman vote years ago because I just don't feel unqualified. I don't watch all the games. So I take this incredibly seriously. Oklahoma City right now is a half a game ahead of Denver for the one seed in the West. Now, the numbers that Nikola Jokic is putting up are so ludicrous. And watching the way he controls and dominates a game every single day, I don't want to be one of these people who allows voter fatigue or anything like that to get in my way. But if Oklahoma City finishes with the best record in the West, which I don't care who you are, no one saw coming, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the MVP. Am I wrong?
He's going to get a lot of votes. I think ultimately I'd go with Jokic, just edging him out. And I think both of them could be in trouble if the Dallas Mavericks had 10 more games in the regular season. They're going to run out of time. Like if you're five, six, seven wins behind those two teams, as Dallas most likely is going to end up,
yeah,
hard to justify Luka getting that. But they have been so good over the last month. And I don't know if 7-8 games is going to be enough to make up that ground. I think those are the three guys that are going to basically split those votes. And I think Jokic will ultimately win it in a very close vote.
The Mavericks are right now 7 games out of first. They're 2 games out of fourth, which is obviously important in different ways. The top three in the West are separated by 1 game. OKC has 22 losses. Denver and the Timberwolves have 23 losses each. Denver has played 1 more game. So they're separated by 1 game in the West, these 3 teams. I hate to say that that difference is going to wind up making my vote. Like, did Shai Gilgeous-Alexander become more valuable because they, you know, won that by one game rather than didn't win it? But I don't know. I just feel like I didn't see this coming.
Yeah.
Right? Did anyone see Oklahoma City coming?
There's two paths of this argument. The first for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is look at their roster, look at their team, look how unexpected this ascension was to the top of the West, built around a great offensive player. That's got one of the most unique games in the league because he just dominates the middle area of the floor as a guard, and no one can really get him off balance. I think the Jokic argument is just the number of different ways that he is controlling everything for that team with his rebounding, with his playmaking, and then obviously he can do whatever he needs to as a scorer on a given night at a certain level of efficiency. I have no problem with anyone who cast their vote for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I just ultimately think he's going to come up a little bit short when in comparison to Jokic.
He's averaging 30 points, 5.5 rebounds, 6 assists, and he's shooting 54% from the field. Who do the numbers say?
So right now, I'm looking at the youngest teams in the NBA. This is going to amplify this point big time. So the three youngest teams in the NBA by average age are the 18-57 Spurs, the 13-62 Pistons, and the 52-22 Oklahoma City Thunder. Like Lex is saying, like, this is basically
voting for SGA.
SGA is voting for SGA. He's the oldest starter at 25. I mean, he's got four youngsters playing with him. He's the one savvy.
And no center on the whole freaking roster.
No center. And by the way, you know, if people haven't seen a whole lot of Oklahoma City this year, you probably should check them out going into the playoffs, because they play a style offensively that is just beautiful to watch. And by the way, Jalen Williams is not just an emerging star. I think Jalen Williams is a star now as a co-star alongside of him. His growth throughout the year, in large part, is why we look at Oklahoma City the way we do, because he has emerged as a guy that you can run your offense through when Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is out of the game. Holmgren, Dort, Giddey's playing his best basketball of the year right now. There's a lot to love about Oklahoma City, there's no doubt.
I think I'm going to – I mean, we've still got 2 weeks to figure this thing out, but I think that's the direction I'm leaning. Legs, you are the best. I'm late. Let me take a quick break. You're listening to Greeny. This is ESPN Radio.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. That was a really good night. I'm so glad that it went the way it went for absolutely everybody involved. You know, and I was thinking about two people last night. I was thinking about the soundbite that we played from Gino Auriemma, which we played on the show yesterday, from April of 2010, when he came on Mike and Mike at a time when his team was just dominating women's college basketball in a way that some people felt was bad for the sport because it had taken all of the mystery and the fun out of all the competition out of what's supposed to be a competition. And I asked him about it, and he said the answer is for everyone else to get better, not for us to get worse. We played that soundbite for you yesterday, and certainly we saw that. I mean, the level of basketball that was on display last night, that first half was breathtaking. The first quarter, the pace in the first quarter was incredible. Stace was in the other room doing something. She wanted to watch the game. She was finishing something up. And I was just yelling to her, you got to get in here and see this. Like, the pace was spectacular. It was absolutely wonderful to watch in every way, regardless of who you were rooting for. The other person I was thinking of, to be honest with you, was Pat Summitt. Hembo and I wrote a book called Got Your Number, and we gave one of the numbers, I don't recall which one it was now, to Pat Summitt. And she was the legendary women's coach at Tennessee who really built women's college basketball in so many ways. Before there was Gina Wariema, before there was Rebecca Lobo, long before anyone had ever considered there being a Caitlin Clark or an Angel Reese, there was Pat Summitt coaching her basketball team by day and washing their uniforms by night. Literally, if you read the chapter on her in our book, they didn't have anyone to do that. So they would practice during the day and they would leave their uniforms in the locker room, and Pat Summitt would wash the uniforms so they could practice the next day and play the next day. And when they would travel to away games, they usually didn't have enough money to stay in hotels. Literally, there wasn't a budget to stay in hotels for her teams when they would travel. So they would sleep in sleeping bags on the floors of gyms. Not making this up, this happened. And so I just, wherever Pat Summitt was watching this thing from last night, I can't even fathom the pride she must have felt, because last night felt like something different. Last night felt, I don't know what the audience is going to be. I don't know if it'll wind up having more viewers than last year's championship game or anything like that. But last night felt like the biggest event that was going on in the world. It was one of those nights where you're watching a sporting event and you feel like the entire world is watching at the same time. And that is something that in the history of women's sports has happened very few times. It doesn't never happen. It usually happens in international competitions. It'll happen when the Women's World Cup is going on and the soccer team is playing and things like that. It does not happen often for women's sports. And so in that regard, it felt like such a victory in so many ways. And there were so many people who deserve so much credit for that. First and foremost, the women who were out there on the floor, because they had to put on the show and they put on an extraordinary show. But there were so many other people who I think can rightly take a lot of pride for us being in a place where a night like last night was possible. And Pat Summitt, probably as much as absolutely anyone, I really wish he had lived to see that night.
There was a sports sociologist that once said, in modern history, there are two figures that belong on the Mount Rushmore of women's sports: Billie Jean King and Pat Summitt. Mm-hmm. No one else is close to third. Pat Summitt was once approached by Tennessee officials, as you might recall, about coaching the men's team at the university. She said, well, why is that considered a step up? You know, Pat Summitt was years, if not decades, ahead of her time. And the legacy that she left, and the legacy that so many of her players and other players left, kind of culminated in the event that we saw last night. Last night was an event. It was a cultural touchstone. It was a basketball game that someday we might look back on and say to ourselves, that was the beginning of this sport becoming so popularized and so mainstreamed that it, if not surpassed the men, certainly met the men. And the point here is not to diminish what the men's game has become. The point here is to amplify that the women's game has gone from being, not that long ago, an afterthought, to at the forefront of everyone's mind. And this is not me just saying this as an ESPN employee because we have had these games, because I have no interest in doing that. It's because I care so much, and people in my life all of a sudden care so much. It was a breathtaking basketball game. The pace was frenetic. The quality of play was extraordinary. No basketball fan could have watched that game and not sincerely enjoyed it.
And no one who loves sports could possibly have missed that game last night, which leads me...
I need you to listen carefully.
I just want you to know.
To Bubba.
Bubba, Brendan, Bubba Peregrin, born and raised where again?
Avon, Connecticut.
Connecticut. The epicenter of the women's college basketball universe. A place where women's college basketball has mattered long before it mattered anywhere else.
Sure.
On a night where UConn's women were playing as well, they were playing with their superstar Paige Beckers and their legendary coach Gina Wariema, playing against the next great one, Juju Watkins and USC. People are telling me that Juju Watkins, is when it's all said and done, is going to be better than Caitlin Clark. And that was the game that came on after this one last night. I can't even fathom how glued to the television you must have been last night, how entranced you must have been by all that we were watching. How did you spend your night last night, Bubba?
Yeah, I did not catch either game. I was actually in Boston, not watching either sporting event. I was at MGM Grand Music Hall for something called A Conversation with Larry David.
You went to a conversation with Larry David?
Correct.
Last night.
Larry David. He did two shows in the entire country, one in Washington, D.C. last week, and then he did one in Boston last night. And there was really no information about how the Washington, D.C. show went, so we had no idea. All we knew is there was going to be a special guest moderating. It turns out it was Bill Simmons. So Bill Simmons was the moderator, and they just kind of talked for about an hour 10, hour 15, and just kind of went through his entire life and, you know, growing up in New York and stand-up and SNL, Seinfeld, and I'd say about 70% was Curb heavy, because I think it was theoretically to promote Curb in the final episode this Sunday. But they just kind of talked about everything about his life and everything, and Larry told some stories, and we had some fun. Then I saw my phone on the app who won, and there we go.
So that, Cam, is that questionable? That's my question to you. Last night was one of, in its own ways, one of the most important nights this network has ever had. You have worked here, Bubba, now what, 15 years?
This is, I believe, my 18th year.
18 years? At ESPN, we have this monster night. We spent all day promoting it. We were all holding our breath. Please let it live up to the hype, and it somehow exceeds it. And he's at a one-hour conversation between Larry David and Bill Simmons in Boston last night. Cam, do you find this a questionable decision on his part?
In a vacuum, it is, but I do remember when Bubba bought these tickets. It was months ago. He probably didn't check when the Women's Elite Eight was, and it wasn't set in stone that it would be LSU-Iowa at that point. I don't think we were even in March Madness at that point. I think this was probably a couple months ago. Bubba can correct me. But
thank you.
Bubba is known as the company guy around here, and for him to miss these two games, especially, like you said, when he is a Connecticut, you know, native. He's not a UConn fan. He hates UConn. But for him to miss these games and this night for this company, putting that alone is pretty stunning.
I mean, look, I think it's very clear. There's one thing I do love is ESPN. I'm a company guy. But if there's one thing I love more, it's Seinfeld, Curb, and Larry David. I mean, my entire life, just like yours, is based on quoting Seinfeld, relating to Seinfeld. My friends talk about Seinfeld. We were always quoting Seinfeld and saying Seinfeld. So, like I said, when I saw this months ago, I was sitting here with Cam. I popped up on Twitter. It said Larry David's doing two shows. Only two shows. He hasn't done this in forever. One in D.C., one in Boston. I'm like, I got to go. I just got to go. I went by myself. None of my friends wanted to go. I just drove up to Boston by myself and just sat there alone. I actually was sitting next to a guy. I got there early. I was just chatting with the guy next to me. We were just talking about, you know, where are you from? What are you doing? He had no idea about anything about sports. He was like, oh, you work ESPN? What? Mike Greenberg, was he a former athlete? Who is he? He had no. It's good to be reminded every once in a while that not everyone has any idea what we're doing. He had no idea about sports, no idea about anything we do. But yeah, I just went up there by myself, and you know, Seinfeld won, ESPN 2.
So it's an interesting decision,
is it though?
Here's what's interesting.
I think you're just jealous.
Well, once you have tickets to something.
But jealous that he wasn't asked to moderate the thing, or what?
Well, I would have done it.
Yeah.
Hey, Larry, you could have called me. I would have absolutely done it.
You would have missed that great game, though.
We did see Larry at the men's games in Boston, right? We saw him at that. They cut away to him.
He was already in Boston.
In Connecticut, so we knew that he was in Boston. They cut to him right in the moment that his fingers went to his nose, which is a terrible – I feel so bad for people when that happens because it's no one's fault. Like, all of us touch our nose every once in a while. You can't not do it. And when you work – when you do what I do for a living, and I guess you guys are getting used to this as well now, like, you're very, very, very conscious of that because – and there's a whole Seinfeld episode on this. There is no way of touching your nose without it looking like you're picking your nose. Like, there's just – it's not possible, right? Was it a scratch or a pick? I mean, that's like a whole – that is a whole – Larry David probably wrote that line. But so they cut to Larry when he was scratching his nose, which was unfortunate. But anyway, the point of the story is when you have tickets to something like that, you do have the option. Like, I remember the day Stace and I had tickets to a Broadway matinee. And Aaron Rodgers was meeting with the New York Jets. Remember that?
I do.
It was probably about a year ago this time. It was probably like right around now, a year ago. And she and I are supposed to go to a play. I don't even remember what it was anymore. And like the Jets plane, the team plane, the owner's plane, Woody Johnson's plane was in the air on its way to go meet Rodgers in Malibu, wherever it is he was. And like we were getting minute by minute updates on the progress. And I said to Stace, I can't go to a play. Like, I cannot sit in a theater with my phone off for 2.5 hours. Like, there's a possibility my entire life will change while this is happening. And as it turned out, the trade didn't happen for like another month or so. So it all worked out okay.
He took his sweet time on that one.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I wound up going to the play. But the point of it is, I don't know, I think Bubba could have sold the ticket. Doesn't sound to me like you couldn't find anyone to go to this with you?
No, well, tickets are pretty expensive, which was...
How much were the tickets?
It was almost like $200 or something, like, which is slightly frustrating for, you know, someone like Larry. But, you know, that's how it always is with, you know, these celebrities and all these concerts. You know,
Larry is a billionaire.
Yeah.
Is he not? If he's not a billionaire, he's got to be damn
well,
close.
Chris Wallace, he was just on Chris Wallace's show, and he asked him, I heard your net worth is $500 million, and Larry said, that's preposterous. And he said, it's also none of your business. And he started swearing at him and yelling at him. But, yeah, he's got more money than you'll ever need to know what to do with. But, I mean, to your point there, though, I think you're talking about essentially a once-in-a-lifetime thing of Aaron Rodgers coming there versus going to a play that you can see anytime. This was a once-in-a-lifetime Larry David coming to Boston. He hasn't done this ever. And I don't know when he's going to go again. Why would I sell my ticket to just watch a basketball game that I can see any time that I'm not even a fan of? What are we talking about here? I'm a Seinfeld fan more than anything.
Bubba,
why would I sell my ticket? What are you, insane?
I'm going to ask you something that could never happen. But if the Cowboys were, say, in the NFC Championship game, would you have been willing to sell your tickets then? Like, for your favorite team, for the Cowboys, do you change your plans then?
Well, I would have probably not even bought tickets if that was the case originally. Yeah. Yes, I would sell the tickets for that, correct.
Well, so you're saying you wouldn't buy a ticket for a Sunday in January, knowing that there's at least a chance.
I would buy them and then sell them, I guess.
How about this? Because the one you don't know is coming is like, would you buy a ticket? Let's say you buy a ticket to go see a conversation with Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. They're having a private dinner and you could be at the table with like six other people.
Right.
But the Mets are playing Game 7 of the World Series that night. Jerry would probably be at the game. Yeah,
exactly.
The problem.
Jerry would cancel the event and go to the game.
What conversation pieces would Bubba contribute to that dinner?
Yeah, well, I would give anything to be a fly on the wall in that conversation. Okay, we got lots working today. A million different things going on. More on the game, more on everything. Embo's got some trivia. Let's go.
I sure do. Who was MVP of the NFL the last season in which the New York Jets won their division? The MVP of the NFL, the last time the Jets finished first in their division. That's the question.
Slap in the face to me over here because I know when it was. Back in a moment on ESPN Radio.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash, shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Greeny, the podcast, previously on Greeny.
This is the time of year where sometimes my allergies can get to me. The inside of my nose itches. We're primarily on the radio, but we have TV cameras aimed at us, and you can watch our show on the ESPN app. And what I really want to do is scratch the inside of my nose. But I'm terrified to do it and get caught on camera doing it, because that is a meme that will live until the end of time.
This is Greeny.
Yeah, you think you got a tough life. Greeny rolling along. I got a text that I think amplifies the point we were making a moment ago that I will read to you in just a moment. But first, Hamboski.
Who was MVP of the NFL the last season in which the New York Jets won their division?
So the first thing you have to do is know which season it was when the Jets last won their division. I know that, so I'll go last. I know what the answer to this question is, because I know what year it was. Others may not. It has been quite some time. Bubba, do you know?
No, I feel like I've heard this question before, but I can't remember what it was. I'm just going to throw out a Marshall Faulk.
Marshall Faulk. How about you, Cam?
I'm not positive on this one. I'm pretty sure. I know we talk about it all the time, so I should know for sure that the Sanchez teams were not division winners. And I think in the early 2000s they had a couple, I think. And I'm going with the year that the Patriots had an off year in there, 3 out of 4 in 2002. I think the Jets were really good that year. I'm hoping they won the division, and the MVP that year was Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon. Brandon and Jack have weighed in?
Yes, Brandon also guesses Rich Gannon. Jack guesses Kurt Warner.
Okay, so Rich Gannon is not a guess. Rich Gannon is right. The year that this happened, the Jets, that was the year Stevie was born. That was the year that Wayne Krubeck got flipped upside down on that play against Chicago and fumbled, and I thought it was going to cost us the division like 5 days after he was born. The Jets wind up clinching the division on the last day of the season because Miami beats New England, and we beat Green Bay, and Brett Favre smacked them. We then beat in what remains to this day the last home playoff game the Jets have played. We beat Peyton Manning and Tony Dungy 41-0, then went to Oakland and played the Raiders, who would later wind up in the Super Bowl with the MVP of the league, Rich Gannon.
That is correct.
Woo!
Very well done. Very well done. Rich Gannon's a 58-year-old man now, by the way. It's been a while.
I think he was that then. Anyway, we were just talking about how enormous this game was last night and how everyone who was anyone, with the obvious exception of Bubba, was watching it. I got a text from my friend Rob Light, who is an agent, more than an agent. He's one of the biggest people in the entire music industry. And he was at an event. There was the iHeart Awards last night in L.A., so he's listening to us talking here.
Why wasn't he watching the game? What's his problem?
Because this is his work. He's there last night. He's like a huge music industry agent.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he had clients and all sorts of people like that he has to deal with. He's not just some schlep fan of Larry David.
Seinfeld's my life.
Listening to Bill Simmons and Larry David.
But you work at ESPN.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's doing his job.
You're not.
Well, if they sent me to the game, I'd watch it.
He is fulfilling his fiduciary responsibilities to his employer, and you are mocking them. You're making a mockery of them.
All right, I mean, I suppose that checks out.
So I mean,
you win this round.
To say this in a way that Jerry and Larry would say it, Rob Light good, Bubba bad. Okay, that's the clear here. But here's what he writes to me, because he's listening to us talking. And he writes to me, Greeny, I was backstage at the iHeart Awards last night in Los Angeles, and everyone backstage, every artist, was watching the basketball game. So when they're backstage back there, they're having awards and whatever it is. But oh, and we're talking about, I mean, I don't even know who won these awards. You could probably look that up. He says, if you're wondering on the air if this was ubiquitous across the country, this showed that it was. Backstage, so who won the iHeart Awards? Could you look that up?
Like, sure.
Who were the people at the iHeart Awards last night in Los Angeles? Those people, unlike Bubba, were watching Iowa and LSU.
Let's see here. Selena Gomez, Dua Lipa, Luke Combs, Miley Cyrus.
Hembo is reading names that he does
Drake,
not know.
Drake, Olivia Rodrigo.
Could you identify any? My daughter's going to see Olivia Rodrigo next week here at the Garden.
Good
could you
her.
Name a song by Olivia Rodrigo?
I'm not sure that I could identify
could you name a song
her.
By Dua Lipa?
I don't know if I could identify him or her.
It's a
That's a her.
It's a her.
Oh, it's not Dua Lipa?
It's Dua. Could you make
she has a twin brother duo.
Could you name a song by Miley Cyrus?
Yeah.
Which one?
Party in the USA.
Good yes. Job. Very good.
Very famous wedding song.
Do you know what legendary character she played on a Disney Channel show?
Yeah, yeah. Hannah Montana.
Very
I had
good.
Two younger sisters.
Okay, listen. Yep. Look at Hembo.
We talked about
done.
This when we talked about the Super Bowl where you thought that something was by Billy Ray Cyrus or
yeah.
something like that.
Yes.
And then that's when we discovered that Hembo was, in fact, a watcher of Hannah Montana growing up.
Yes. Did you actually? I was an avid Hannah Montana viewer. My kids are exactly the age where that was the show, and I was one of those dads who sat there and watched with them every night, to the point that in the episode where she takes off her wig, I teared up, like it was just sort of very,
shed one, huh?
It was emotional for me. I did, because it was you know, it's about your kids. You'll get this someday, Cam. You actually were watching that as a viewer.
I watched that episode, too, with my younger sister. I was flabbergasted. I don't think I cried, though.
I tear up, and
it was
I turned
a stunning
to Nikki.
Moment.
So Nikki and I are watching this, and the episode ends, and I turned to Nikki, and I said, my God, that was unbelievable. And she said, yeah, it was. And I said, did you cry when she took her wig off? And Nikki goes, no. And I was like, yeah, me neither. Like, I'm such a sentimental fop.
No kidding. When I got home from school, I generally watched Around the Horn and Pardon the Interruption.
Okay.
That was my indoctrination.
Well, but that's good. And, and then, so you came, did you drive to school listening to Mike and Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's why I'm here.
That's the funny thing, is that I will, if I'm ever trying to get...
Not like, until I could drive, though. I mean, that was 2007, and you guys had been on the air for a long time.
So when you, but when you were being driven to school?
That's what we would listen to every day.
What was?
Mike and Mike.
Oh.
And I was like 12.
But my point is that, and then you started driving yourself and also listening to
that's right.
Mind.
But what I'm saying is that you predate my ability to drive. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, but so you're just trying to make a point of how old I am?
Yeah, that's what yeah, all
well,
I'm saying.
Greeny working here predates me being alive. So if you really want to.
What year were you born?
97.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
My first day at ESPN was August 28th, 1996.
Yeah, I was born less than a year later.
Bubba likes it. Bubba's just happy because I'm giving him a hard time. But by the way, it is the last curb this weekend, Bubba. Are you going through? Will you shed a tear? Particularly now that Richard Lewis has died and everything else. Like, will you shed a tear at the last curb?
No. Well, have you been watching it at all this season? Or
no, I will watch all of them at some point, but I've not been.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't want to. Not that this won't necessarily be a spoiler, but there's some. There are people hypothesizing that he might be doing a Seinfeld.
Right. Going to do the same thing.
Same thing again.
I've read that.
Because there's an arrest involved, and they might be. So people. And he's referenced the Seinfeld finale multiple times. So I've only seen, I think I've watched six. So I have two more, well, now three more to get caught up on. And I want to watch the last one, like, live to be on it. But I don't think I'll cry, but I'll be sad to see it go because it's one of my favorite shows. It's so great.
Did you cry at the last Seinfeld?
No, I mean, I was pretty. I mean, I was, what was it, 97?
Sounds right.
98.
Cam wasn't even born.
Yeah, so I was.
No, I was 98. I was one.
I was whatever. I was 14. So I mean,
what's the last time you cried, Bubba?
I mean, I'm pretty sentimental and emotional like you as well. Like I will.
I'm a crier.
Yeah, I mean, I will like tear up and stuff like that. Whether it's like family stuff on movies or obviously any military stuff or anything like that. I'm open to. I will definitely tear up and cry when I watch stuff like
Bubba
that.
Bubba being a sentimental guy is not something I had
not
on my
bingo card.
I'll definitely. I mean, any like movies like the, you know, the Rudies, Remember the Titans, anything like that. I'll definitely. Tear up and cry, but
I like that
military stuff.
I like that about military stuff.
You get a dad coming home from you know surprising his son at a karate match. I'll be crying.
I'll take a short break. ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio, or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN, and also available wherever you get your podcasts.